Hello and welcome in to some late night Chiefs talk here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Josh Abriscoe, taking you through the rest of your evening, or maybe tonight on a Friday night. Maybe I'm taking you into your morning, or I guess you could listen to the podcast after the fact. But if you're listening live, then wherever you're going, be at home or out, I'm with you for the next, hour and change or so until you get to your destination. You can grab the rest of the podcast page later on. Welcome in. Enjoy the NFL Films music while we can give it to you, because we've got a little more time to help you preview Chiefs-Colts and maybe learn a little bit more from this last week of Chiefs pressers and news stories, and you get a Tyreek Hill update and all of that goodness throughout the course of today. We'll put a bow on all of it for you here tonight on Sports Radio 810. Again, I'm Josh Abriscoe. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Abriscoe and all of that goodness. Beards McFly is hitting the buttons. Tonight, we will talk to Matt Verderam of FanSided and Sterling Holmes of the Homestretch over on ESPN Kansas City. I'm not going to promise you a lot, maybe a couple minutes of Sterling. We'll talk to Verderam, though, for a good long while, because it's been a few weeks since we've caught up with Matt, and I'm curious to take a look around the league and also a look at the Chiefs with him coming up here in a little while. But a couple things happened at practice on Thursday that I haven't gotten to talk about yet, and we've got a few notes and a few pieces of news going into this game coming up on Sunday. Primetime, Sunday Night Football, Chiefs and Colts. So I want to start with a couple of the newsworthy things that we have. Damian Williams is looking like he's going to go, according to Andy Reid. We may hear from him later on. We'll see how much time we have. But no Tyreek Hill. He was limited in practice this week, announced today, earlier today by Andy Reid, that he would be out on Sunday. That's what I expected. It wouldn't have stunned me to my core if he would have gotten out there, but pretty much expected Tyreek Hill to not be available on Sunday, and I think that's generally for the best. I know he's got a weird injury where it's not about, I mean, Andy Reid touched on this, but it's not really about wear and tear or feeling good again. It's, hey, is all of this stuff in his shoulder and clavicle and sternum back where it's supposed to be, and could he withstand the weight of maybe a few hundred pounds landing on him with a substantial amount of force? I'm not a doctor, and I if a doctor said, yeah, it's 100%, not only would that be fine, I'd also imagine we'd be seeing him on Sunday. So him not being 100% and not playing in this game is okay with me, all things considered. Eventually, I'll tell you what I'm thinking for the actual game coming up on Sunday and why I'm so optimistic. We're also at a point where we're not 1,000% sure what to expect from the Colts. They're going to have a lot of catching up to do, especially on the defensive side. A lot of holes from a defense that's just losing a lot of talent. On the offensive side of the ball, obviously T.Y. Hilton and Marlon Mack are both huge, huge parts of what it is that they're able to do. And good luck, I guess, if they do have to come into this game without those guys. On the defensive side, Clayton Gathers, Malik Hooker is a big deal. Darius Leonard, and Tyquan Lewis, and Paris Campbell are all out. Paris Campbell's a receiver, but the rest of those guys being defenders, you've got a couple of safeties and then two more defensive players, a pass rusher and all that. There's a lot of moving pieces that the Colts we know right now will be without. If they're also without T.Y. Hilton, or even a limited T.Y. Hilton, or if they're without Marlon Mack, or even with a limited Marlon Mack, it's adding even more wrinkles to what that Colts team is going to have to overcome to keep up with the Chiefs offensively, which you may have noticed by now is a really, really difficult task. So all of that notwithstanding, the stories for this game, I think, are largely going to be determined by the inactives and by the reports we get over the rest of the weekend about Hilton. Because to show my hand a little bit, I don't know how you could think that the Colts offensively are going to keep up here with the Chiefs. I just don't even know where that argument would begin. Maybe it begins with saying, well, the Lions were able to do some things with the Chiefs. A better Lions offense, honestly, a better quarterback, and if you're looking at no T.Y. Hilton and no Marlon Mack, a better receiver and a better number one running back. But we kicked this around a little bit earlier today on The Athletic. I was talking to Seth Kizer and Nate Taylor about the idea of there being a blueprint for stopping Chiefs, and Seth had a tweet, a whole tweet thread, saying that the Lions did a nice job, but part of it was the Chiefs losing three straight possessions of fumbles and Mahomes missing some throws he normally makes. And whenever, you know, for all the times we talked about, like, number of possessions versus time of possession and all of that, whenever you see a few missed throws, typically that average will even out over the normal course of a game. And the Chiefs gave back three straight possessions to the point that obviously it's harder to iron that back out as an offense and to stay back on track. Because you have less opportunities to have successful drives after you have a few unsuccessful ones in a row, which was out of the control of Patrick Mahomes. One of those was out of the hands of the offense, although Mahomes did take blame for the fumbled handoff back on Wednesday. Anyway, I digress for the most part. I'm not terribly worried about what opposing teams are going to do to the Chiefs offensively from here on out, maybe until we get to New England, and then I'll start being a little more nervous about it. Patricia had a good game plan that we've talked about a lot this week, and by the end, the offense was moving again, and then on that last drive, obviously, the Chiefs marched down, scored that touchdown, and end up winning the game. So defensively, I just don't think the Colts, pun about to be intended, have the horses to keep up with what the Chiefs are bringing, and then offensively, I don't think they have it there either. Frank Clark even mentioned on Thursday, like, he was sort of giving the scouting report on this opposing offense. He said Brissett holds on to the ball for too long, and so maybe there's a larger conversation to have there, you know, with Frank Clark and what's it going to take for him to have some more success rushing the passer, because it hasn't been great. In fact, there was a tweet from Dan Pizzuta tweeting out a stat from Sports Info Solutions, which said of 51 players with at least 100 pass rush attempts, Frank Clark has the lowest pressure rate at 2.42% at the moment, and that's really rough. I mean, just for any starting pass rusher, that's not ideal. And for a guy that you brought in to do more than that, it's not ideal. And Clark talked about it a bunch again on Thursday when he spoke to the media at the podium and you know, took a bunch of questions for a while. He also had a tweet right after the game that I don't think we've even talked about here, talking about how tackles don't pay the bills, but sacks do, and he needs to be better at all of that. Like, everyone knows what's going on there, and I'd argue that Detroit game was the most underwhelming of Frank Clark's games. And so seeing if a quarterback that holds onto the ball a little longer is ripe for the picking for Frank Clark will be really interesting. Stafford hung onto the ball longer than Derek Carr, Gardner Minshew did, and Lamar Jackson was obviously running around back there, but the job changes slightly whenever it's Lamar Jackson you're trying to contain. So again, a lot of factors are at play there, but I also don't think it's any sort of exaggeration to say that or any sort of overstatement to say that Frank Clark's been underwhelming for the Chiefs this year, and so that's something to keep an eye on. I think fairly. Like, I think there's nothing. There's nothing that needs to really be couched outside of, yeah, I mean, Clark needs to get to the quarterback more often. So keeping an eye on that against Brissett will be really interesting. But also, back on Thursday, we've talked about the run defense a lot because I have started a cult around the article that Seth wrote about the run defense being bad and not really mattering. But back on Thursday, Steve Spagnuolo talked to the media a little bit about the concern. He was asked about the concerns with the run defense not being exactly excellent. And as he was kind of breaking down where his concern was, I thought he gave a pretty interesting look into how he's measuring success for his own defense.
Yeah, the level of concern is the explosive run plays, in my opinion. We do a win-loss for every play. By that, I mean we win the down, win or lose the down based on the situation. So first and 10, you've got to hold them on four or less. So we've had a number of run plays in there where we're winning. In the second half of this game, we were actually 61% win-loss in the second half. But you wouldn't know that because five of them led to 68 yards. So to me, it's the explosive plays. If we could limit those, I think we'd be in much better shape.
So the takeaway at the end there might seem a little bit obvious, and that's fair enough, I suppose. But the insight there into not just how they evaluate, which seems reasonable enough, the win-loss percentage and everything, but their actual numbers, I think, are great. We don't usually get that kind of stuff. To say that they had a 61% win-loss percentage on the ground in the second half of the game actually checks out in a way that Seth and I had talked about a little bit. to look, though, at the fact that five of the losses that they suffered there went for 68 yards is really interesting. Like, that sort of gives you a little bit of context to show that it's not a average giving up 6 or 7 yards a carry. It's winning 61% of the time, but on five big losses, you're giving up 68 yards. And so again, like, having to not give up big plays, that's not reinventing the sport. I understand that. But I thought we got a little more from Spagnuolo there than you usually will get in a defensive coach kind of explaining his methodology and everything, at least whenever Bob Sutton was here. So I thought that was interesting. And if you're looking at Marlon Mack or whoever it is that ends up playing for the Colts at the running back spot on Sunday, I just don't worry very much about the idea that the run defense can be the thing that beats this team, especially at home, Sunday Night Football. The offense looked a little bit rusty. Maybe they have a little extra juice to try to work through here and to try to show the world in a game after, again, being a little bit off-center last week. And so you can try to hold the ball for a long period of time. The Lions did that and still lost, because at the end of the day, it's more important about what you do at the end of those drives. The Chiefs just had three drives end with the ball going right back to the Lions, and if those are mistakes that Mahomes had made, the tenor of our conversation about the game from last week, I think, would be very different. But they weren't. I mean, it was Darrell Williams and Sammy Watkins and Mecole Hardman. And so those guys all kind of suffer the same fate at the same time, and it ends up being, you know, genuinely problematic. One other thing that this might seem a little bit out of left field. We hadn't gotten to talk to Dave Tobe for a couple of weeks out at Chiefs. And one thing that shows up on my Twitter timeline all the time is people asking about, you know, why did D'Anthony Thomas field that? Why did Pringle bring that out? Why didn't he just put his heels on the 10-yard line and let it go over his head? Stuff like that. And I've always sort of contended that I believe Dave Tobe is typically relatively aggressive in terms of where guys are allowed to bring the ball out from and where it makes sense to try to take a risk. Maybe it costs you 5 yards as opposed to a touchback, but it gives you a certain percentage chance to house one. And so with all of that in mind, I actually asked Dave Tobe back on Thursday about fielding kickoffs in the end zone or fielding punts deep in their own territory, which is something that, again, lots of people have been asking me about, and if he has a general rule of thumb there in those situations.
Every game is different. You know, it depends on how much hang time we're getting on a kickoff. If it's not a lot of hang time, we'll come out a little bit deeper. If it is a lot of hang time, we won't. You know, sometimes teams don't give you that option. You got to come out with it. But it's those 4 or 5 yard deep ones. I mean, Pringles, that was too deep. He came out a little bit too deep. You know, he was going backwards, catching it going backwards. Not a great decision when he got stuck in that last game.
So I do think it's interesting to note that, like, there's not a cut and dry rule, right? And that seems relatively obvious in retrospect, that Tobe is going to be trying to evaluate everything in its own regard. I think every coach seems to be doing that in every possible situation. But to acknowledge that Pringle was basically backpedaling and ended up, I believe, kind of towards the sideline there and just shouldn't have brought that one out. I do think it's still fair to say that Tobe probably encourages his guys to be on the side of aggressiveness whenever it comes to returning kicks. But they do have to do a little bit of evaluation in terms of hang time and how long they're going to watch the ball up there and then where the blocking and the coverage is coming as the ball's coming back down. Again, I that's a little bit like minute perhaps, but enough people have asked me about that I went and got you your dang answer. Hope you're happy, because I did it. I went the extra mile. Another piece of information that we've gotten today, and that we might not really get much more information on until around this time Sunday, because around this time Sunday the game will be over, and it'll be me and Brad Porter talking about it right here on Sports Radio 810. I've been hearing a lot and seeing a lot about Mo Claiborne, both questions and reports and all of that, and wondering where is Claiborne going to end up in this cornerback rotation? Will it be a rotation at all? Will he come in and take Charvarius Ward's spot? And he spoke to the media earlier today. I'm not going to play a big chunk of the sound, but he said that he didn't know as of, you know, early this afternoon or around noon. He didn't know what the plan was yet, and Andy Reid was non-committal. Spagnuolo was non-committal on Thursday, and that's not like, I'm not saying that dismissively, just factually, that's the case. They're not really saying what their plan is for Claiborne, which, you know, even if you're trying to get a little bit of a competitive edge against the Colts, maybe Jacoby Brissett is looking at more Ward film than Claiborne film, or vice versa, and then you want to get maybe the curveball on the guy. I get it. But he is coming back from a suspension. I do think he has to play. I mean, he's been out there apparently in meetings and in the playbook, and he said he got a lot of work and practice this week. And so I certainly expect him to be active, and I expect him to get playing time. Maybe he doesn't start. Maybe if you're Steve Spagnuolo, that might be a tough message to send to Charvarius Ward right now, because clearly he would be the guy, who's third among those three starters at the moment. And so again, like that, you know, if you don't want to totally deflate Ward at this point, let him continue his tryout and then start kind of working Mo Claiborne in certain situations. I could see that being the starting point, and then ultimately having Claiborne take over the starting role and then letting Ward be the guy that comes in if Breland or Claiborne get banged up. And also, this all kind of plays in to the eternal question of, are the Chiefs going to trade for a true number one cornerback? This is something to keep an eye on for the next couple of weeks, because they've got a couple of weeks before that trade deadline hits, and a few of those disgruntled corners are still in the same spot they've been for a while now, so I'm obviously going to remain tremendously interested in that whole storyline. For me, if Mo Claiborne can come in and be an upgrade over what we've gotten from Charvarius Ward so far, that would be great. I think that if Mo Claiborne never played a snap for this team, the Chiefs would still be in the AFC Championship game. But trying to figure out the best iteration of this defense is one of the most important things this team will be doing over the next few months, because they're at a point right now where they need to not lose a bunch of weird games in a row, hopefully keep the one seed, the very least you're keeping the two seed, and then get to the AFC Championship game, and by that point be playing your best football. Like, that is, I know it's wild, but that's where we're at this point. The Chiefs are genuinely that good, and I think that's almost inarguable at this point. So I think that's all relatively interesting. And because we've got Matt Verderam coming up and then Sterling after that, I did want to, I will give you sort of the front end prediction now. I've been saying 42-24 Chiefs over the last few days. I don't even know if 24 is too generous to a Colts team that could be without its two best offensive weapons. If I got decent odds on a prop bet of do the Chiefs put up 40, I'd be really tempted by that, because I do think there's a little bit of a stink on the offense from just being kind of messy like it was on Sunday. And I don't really think that's Mahomes or decision making, but you turn the ball over three times, twice on offense and once on special teams. You get the touchdown from your defense. Mahomes doesn't throw a passing touchdown. It's not the truest form of the Chiefs offense. I don't know if they did anything wrong there. Stuff was just a little wonky. And so I think there's a pretty decent chance that they go out to Arrowhead Sunday night and put on a pretty sizable show. So that's where I'm at right now. We'll see if anyone else changes my mind over the course of the rest of the evening. Again, I'm Josh Briscoe. You can follow me or tweet me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. We'll keep getting you ready for Chiefs and Colts whenever we come back here on Sports Radio 810.
Kansas City's hometown sports station, Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We'll be right back. Welcome back into Sports Radio 810. I'm Joshua Briscoe here to help you close out your day with some Chiefs talk. And we haven't successfully talked to Matt Verderam of FanSided like since the season kicked off. So Matt, you got a pretty good sample size at this point to go back to anything you were incredibly right or incredibly wrong about from the preseason.
Yeah, there's been a good combo of both, which I guess is good. That means I got some stuff right.
Right.
The Chiefs are not what I thought they would be, so I was right in that. The Ravens are, I think, better than I thought they were going to be, although now they're kind of backsliding. There's a lot. I thought the Falcons were going to be good. That's not the case. My predictions, like everybody else, some really good, some really, really burn the tape bad, but that's okay.
We'll talk about a bunch of Chiefs stuff, and if you're not already following all of Matt's work, you can follow him on Twitter at Matt Verderam. You can listen to the Stacking the Podcast. You know what? Maybe you should rename it. The Stacking the Box Podcast, which now features Jeff Schwartz every week, and you're going to read the Stacking the Box column, and all of Matt's work on FanSided is always excellent, and it's taking on the NFL as a whole. And so before we get to some of the Chiefs-specific stuff, if I were to say, hey, pick the headlines out of 4 weeks of NFL football, I mean, like, for a minute, it was probably the Browns being a disaster, and then they looked really good last week. You can find a handful of those storylines. Every starting quarterback has gotten hurt at some moment or another, and we're a quarter of the way into the season. If you had to pick a storyline or two, where would you start?
Boy, there's a lot. I'll put Antonio Brown aside because I think everybody's had enough of that.
Antonio Brown and Andrew Luck are almost – I mean, like, they're almost off-the-field stories with obviously huge on-the-field implications.
Right. One of them has to deal with the Chiefs. I would say, look, it almost feels like we're back to the early 1990s in the sense, if you're old enough to remember, the 49ers and the Cowboys, it was pretty much those two teams.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever won that NFC title game – was going to obviously go to the Super Bowl, be a big favorite in it. I feel that way this year with Kansas City and New England. They are far and away the two best teams in football. I don't think – look, it's early October. Things change. Mm-hmm. Injuries happen. Mm-hmm. But right now, those two teams are heads and tails above anybody else. Now, on the NFC side, a couple headlines I'd say, what is going on with Jared Goff and the Rams?
Mm.
Goff has not been good. Mm-hmm. Gurley, it's, I think, being shown, like, he's just not going to carry the load. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Defensively, they've got issues. They look like they've almost been figured out to some degree, and McVay has not been able to adjust. And then the other one is, hey, the Saints, look, they lost Drew Brees for 6 weeks, and you say, okay, well, that's probably it for them. Well, then they turn around and win in Seattle and then come home and beat Dallas on a Sunday night. Mm. So, look, there have been quite a few. As you can see, everyone feels like 30 teams in the league are 2-2.
Right,
so,
it really does.
Parity, mediocrity, whatever you want to say, but everybody's in it for the most part.
Yeah, you've got like the Dolphins, Jets, and Washington, and then you've got the Chiefs and the Patriots, and I don't know what to think about literally anybody else.
I know what to think about the Bengals.
Oh, good call, good call. I regret leaving them out of the terrible team conversation.
It's funny, though. Like, even Denver. Denver's clearly not good. They're 0-4. But, like, Denver's a whisker from being 2-2.
Right.
You know, it's just a weird year where a lot of these teams – I mean, I make picks every week, and I can't make heads or tails of about half the league.
Yeah.
I don't know who's going to – like, there's games this week, Bills-Titans. I don't know who the hell's going to win that game.
No.
Like – how could anybody know who's going to win that game? The Jaguars or Carolina? Like, good luck picking that game.
This week, I felt especially strongly in that regard because it's also Cardinals-Bengals. The average pass in that game is going to be on the line of scrimmage. Like, it's just going to be throwing the ball horizontally through four quarters. Even against teams that you think might be good-ish, like, Houston can be sneaky bad. Atlanta's always sneaky bad. They play each other. Tampa Bay just beat the Rams, and then they're going to New Orleans, the team that we are sort of surprised they're winning without Drew Brees. I mean, it's just absolutely packed. If I was going to try to make you, though, come up with the second tier of the AFC specifically, because obviously, we've got Chiefs, Patriots in their own class.
Right.
If you said, all right, the other team, two teams, maybe three teams out of the AFC who could challenge there, who you could see, if one of these teams is going to pull the upset in January over the Patriots or Chiefs, who would you go to?
Okay, so I actually just did this with Jeff Schwartz, our co-host, Josh Hill, on the podcast earlier this week, and so this is how I tiered them. like everybody else in the world that watches football, Kansas City, New England, whatever order you want to put them, tier one. Mm-hmm. Then tier two for me is the Atlantic Ocean. And then on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean, okay, is like the European coast would be, you know, I would say the Chargers. I would say potentially Baltimore, although it's hard to figure Baltimore. Like they yeah. killed Miami and Arizona, but who cares?
Right.
And then they lost against two good teams. So I don't know yet what I'm getting out of them. But I would put them there. I'd put Cleveland there, although the coach scares the heck out of me. I wouldn't put anybody in the AFC South there. Look, I think the Colts of all those teams, and they're healthy, are probably the best. They're not healthy. Jacksonville, I actually really like Mitchell. I think Mitchell's legitimately good.
Yeah, he's fun, too.
You know what? I actually put them there. Oh, for no other reason, I think he can play, and they have a really good defense. But, man, I got to tell you, I want to make it clear, those teams are so far back of New England and Kansas City. I mean, for those two teams not to be in the conference title game, it would take an injury to the quarterback, or it would take one of those other teams I just mentioned pulling off an absolutely monumental upset in the divisional round. Because I don't think any of those teams are going in there and playing straight up and beating Kansas City or New England.
I think you're right. And if you're going to just, while we're going all the way to the extremes of this, on the NFC side, do you see a clear number one in the NFC side of it to challenge one of those two teams in the Super Bowl?
No. I think the NFC is more kind of grouped together. I think the Saints could be. Mm. If they continue to play well and they could breeze back, they might be a problem. Because if they get home field advantage, like they should have been in the Super Bowl last year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Seattle can do it. I think Seattle's always dangerous because they're pretty good defensively and they have Wilson. But I don't think they're on the same level as teams like Dallas, who if I had to pick would be my favorite right now in the NFC. Green Bay, you know, I picked Philly before the season. I'm sticking with them. Like, I still think that Philadelphia, you know, Wentz has got to play better. But if he does, yeah, that team is extremely talented. And then also, I don't know what you're getting out of the Bears from the quarterback, but that defense, like if you score 20 points, you're going to win. But I would say right now, I like Philly, Dallas, New Orleans, and Green Bay as kind of the four favorites in the NFC.
What team has bungled it so far? Like, not just, oh, they're bad. Like, I don't think the Dolphins have done anything other than go according to plan. But if I say, hey, this team is full of mistakes and accidents right now, who's the contender there?
Oh, to me, it's not. Look, maybe some would claim I'm biased because I feel like I say this every week in my podcast, but the Texans. Just an unending stream of nonsense out of Bill O'Brien. Like, just unbelievable. How do you not run away with that division?
I don't know.
Bill O'Brien.
I don't know.
You have Deshaun Watson.
Yes.
You have DeAndre Hopkins.
Yes.
J.J. Watt. Whitney Merciless. You had more cap space than any team in football not named the Colts or the Jets this offseason. And Andrew Luck retires, and Jacksonville has their quarterback go down the first quarter of the first game, and Jalen Ramsey wants to trade, and you can't win that division. But you just can't be bothered to find a way to win that division. You lost the game at home to Kyle Allen, who fumbled three times and lost all three fumbles, and you scored 10 points. They spent first-round pick on Titus Howard. Mm-hmm. Second-round pick on Max Sharping. Both offensive linemen, for those who don't know. Mm-hmm. Then they traded two firsts and a second for Laramie Tunsil. So, in essence, this offseason, they invested three first-round picks and two second-round picks. And last year, they gave up 62 sacks, most in the league. This year, they're on pace to give up 72. It's just incredible. It's impossible to be that incompetent. And yet, here they are, 2-2.
Of the four rookie head coaches, this was brought to my attention earlier today. They have played 16 games, the teams under rookie head coaches, and they have won 0, but Cliff Kingsbury did get a tie. Of Fangio, Flores, Kingsbury, and then Zach Taylor in Cincinnati, do you think that any of those four guys, again, I guess this is sort of making it the bungled it question of the winless teams, but do you think any of those guys have somehow gotten on the hot seat in just four games of coaching?
I don't think there's any chance Zach Taylor gets fired. They're the most patient organization in the league because they're the cheapest. I think Flores, look, to fire him would be just a complete injustice.
Yes.
What is he supposed to do?
Right.
Like, they're awful, and they're trying to be awful.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any chance Kingsbury gets fired. The Cardinals just fired a guy after a one-and-done year. Mm-hmm. They went on a huge ledge, and they married him with Kyler Murray. Like, they can't. They can't fire him.
Yep.
I would say, of any of them, Fangio's the guy that you look at and say, look, if that thing goes really south, and I mean like 2-14 south,
mm-hmm.
I could see Denver in a little bit of a panic. Look, ownership has changed hands. Obviously, Todd Ballin tragically passed away. Like, they're in a lot of flux. Elway is on thin ice as it is, even though he's John Elway in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be shocked if Denver just said, you know what, we're going a completely different direction here.
Mm.
Like, we can't continue to do this. This is untenable. I'm not saying I think that will happen,
mm-hmm.
but I wouldn't put it past the possibility of it happening. And then he's not a rookie head coach because he's coached somewhere else. But I'll tell you right now, Adam Gase, look, I'm from New York.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, like, that thing, he finishes the season 3-13, he's going to be gone. Like, that's happening.
Yeah.
Because he was an extremely unpopular hire in New York when they brought him on.
Mm-hmm.
But then people said, well, we got no choice, we're going to give him a chance. And then they fired McCagnan, and the whole offseason was just a weird circus in Gotham. And then this happens, and he's throwing everybody and their mother under the bus. That is the situation. Believe me. Like, that New York's not just going, oh, that's okay, that's fine, that's good enough. Like, that he is going to be in serious hot water come the end of this season.
If the quarterback, like, if he would have played this weekend, he could have died because he could have got hit in the spleen. I mean, what a snake bitten wild thing to be true about a franchise. I'm curious about your feelings on both of the New York / New Jersey teams because they've had some interesting storylines. Obviously, we all laughed at the Daniel Jones selection, and then he has a really excellent first game, and then he starts turning the ball over a little bit. The Jets, you know, have the illness that I imagine that a high number of high school and college age kids get, and their quarterback has mono or is getting over it now. Like, it's just those two teams are so strange to me, and I was curious if you've been left wanting by either of their performances.
Well, how can I put this? Okay, so the Giants, I expected absolutely nothing of coming into the season.
Yeah.
Talked to some people around the team coming in. And was told that, look, Daniel Jones is a lot better than people think. And not in the way of like, oh, hey, you know, we didn't screw this up. Like, in a way of like, no, seriously, like, he can really play. He's going to be the starter sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll be frank, it happened even sooner than I thought it was going to happen.
Sure.
But, you know, they made the right decision. I don't even know why they bothered to waste two games. Maybe they just figured, look, you know, respect for Manning, whatever. I actually think the Giants are on a halfway decent course here. Now, a lot of this depends on how well Daniel Jones plays the rest of the year.
Sure.
But there's actual hope for the Giants. I think Shurmur is a good offensive coach. You know, I think Gettleman, listen, a lot of people in the media can't stand him because he's prickly, and he can kind of give you a little double talk. That being said, the guy built the Super Bowl team in Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like he has no idea what he's doing. So the Giants, it's a stable organization. It's got great ownership. I think the Giants have some hope. The Jets, look, their ownership's a train wreck, and has been forever.
Yes.
And I do think Joe Douglas is a very good GM. And by the way, this is the other reason that Gase is on thin ice. So Joe Douglas is now the general manager. They replaced Mike McCagnan. Well, Mike McCagnan was the one who, quote-unquote, hired Adam Gase.
Uh-huh.
Joe Douglas had nothing to do with Adam Gase. And Joe Douglas is not going to tie his career to somebody he might not believe in.
Right.
So if this thing goes sideways, if you're Joe Douglas, why would you keep Adam Gase? Especially if you believe, hey, look, I can go out and get somebody else in here who I trust, who I believe in, and be the head coach. So I think the Jets are a train wreck. Yes, injuries have played a big part in it, but you know what? They weren't injured when they blew a 16-0 lead in the third quarter of the Bills at home.
Right.
But they weren't injured for that game. They played like they were injured.
Right.
But they weren't. So I think the Giants have a lot more hope than the Jets.
I haven't even really talked to you about the Dolphins story on a larger scale. I mean, you said that firing Flores at the end of this year would be an injustice, which I obviously agree with.
Yep.
But whenever you look at, and I don't know if the Dolphins are unhappy with where they're at right now. It seems like they're kind of doing what they want, and maybe maybe they give Josh Rosen a half a fair shake. I don't know. I mean, it's not a great spot, obviously, but he's playing football games at least. But whenever you look at what they're doing strategically, I'm coming around on this. I might give this away in the way I ask this, but whenever you look at what the Dolphins are doing and kind of doing this on purpose and then making these moves to send out good players in return for draft picks, and they're going to have all this cap space and everything, and then you look right. at Denver and Washington and Cincinnati and New York and Arizona and maybe Atlanta and Pittsburgh. Those are all the teams with less than two wins, because everyone else has two wins. But whenever you look at all of those teams and then kind of start looking at the Dolphins again, has anything changed for you in evaluating their strategy?
No. Look, I'm not one of these people that feels like it's some affront to the game that they're tanking.
Right.
I don't like it,
yeah.
but I get it.
Yeah.
The problem I have with it from the Dolphins standpoint is just the premise of it in general, I guess, is the best way to put it. So I'm a big believer in, you can trade all these guys. You can trade now Tunzel, I get it. They got a ridiculous call for him. I would make that trade too. But
yes.
Well, like Minka Fitzpatrick and if they end up trading Xavier Howard and all these other deals that they've made, trade all these guys. And the idea is, well, we have so many draft picks that we're gonna realize, okay, well, that's great. Well, you better hope that in the first round with those picks, you draft a guy like, I don't know, Minka Fitzpatrick.
Right.
You better hope that you draft a guy like Laramie Tunzel. And if you don't, well, then you're the Browns then.
Right.
Like, everybody always loves Sashi Brown. Like, oh, look at all these moves. You know, they never won anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he drafted, I don't want to say he, but they were drafting him. Brandon Whedon and Johnny Manziel and Justin Gilbert. Mm-hmm. Right? Cam Irving, who has now found success in Kansas City, but was a train wreck in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, you've got to make these trades worth it. Now, there are some teams looking around the league that I just say, look, if you're gonna try to be a successful conference franchise, at times just you gotta make a move. Like, I look at Denver, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote this not too long ago. They need to trade Chris Harris.
Yes.
They need to trade Emmanuel Sanders.
Yes.
If they get anything for Derek Wolf, they should trade him too. Like, that team's going nowhere.
Yeah.
They're old. They're bad. They're in a division where they have no shot of winning the division in the foreseeable future. If I'm John Elway, I'm trading all those guys, second-round picks, third-round picks, maybe Harris, you get a late first from a team. Like, you should be trying to do everything you can to retool, because even if you get good in the next 3-4 years, those guys aren't going to be there at that point.
Right.
So that's a little bit different than trading Minka Fitzpatrick, who mm-hmm. should be a pillar of your team, and you ship them off to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and that's totally fair. We're talking about Verderam of FanSided. You can check out the Stacking the Box podcast and the column and all of his work at fansided.com. Let's talk about the Chiefs for a little bit, because we've got four games of them now to look back at. Has anything specific to the Chiefs surprised you or changed for you in four games?
No, I don't think so. I mean, look, I think when you look at Kansas City, it's pretty simplistic, right? Like, they're an all-time offense.
Mm-hmm.
They're a defense that they need to get a couple of stops every game.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's a really simplified look at things, but I think it's just the easiest. Well, sometimes the easiest answer is the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
They are a team that defensively, if they can hold you to 26 points or less, they're going to win almost every game. And
yeah.
I think the Detroit game was the perfect example of that. They didn't play great defensively. They made a couple of big plays in their own red zone. Obviously, Rashad Breeland with the 100-yard scoop and score.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't great. They had about 400 yards of offense. They couldn't stop you from running the football. It didn't matter because, and that is the one thing I will say that, not to dovetail off your question, but I think there's this mindset in the league right now, because I think everybody thought, okay, look, Mahomes was unbelievable last year. This year, he's got to come back to attack a little bit. Well, mm-hmm. that hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
So now I think there's almost this mindset of, okay, well, the only way to beat him and to beat them is to keep him off the field, which
right.
in a vacuum makes sense. And I know your buddy, my friend Seth Keezer, he writes over at The Athletic, does a great job. He writes all the time that, hey, look, the running the ball against Kansas City is a fool's errand, and I totally agree with him.
Mm-hmm.
You're not beating the Chiefs running the ball.
Right.
You have no shot. You need to score.
Yep.
You need to score 38 points. If you don't do that, you're losing.
Yep.
And, I always laugh. These teams that just pound the ball and pound the ball. Okay, Detroit ran the ball as well. Same team's going to run against them all year. Same with Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Those teams average giving up 33.5 points. And they both lost.
Yep.
You're not going to win like that. So I think the reality is that the Chiefs, look, they're phenomenal offensively, as we all expected. They're getting Tyreek Hill back, I would think, next week.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like that way.
Mm-hmm.
So you feel good about that. defensively, they've done some things. They're better in the red zone. I think they're better against the pass. You'd like to see Frank Clark get going a little bit. I know he's gotten a ton of attention, but he'd be the first one to tell you he's got to be better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think overall, if you're a Chiefs fan, if you're a Chiefs executive, you feel pretty good about where they are.
Yeah, I'm with you on all of that, especially on the run game thing. I mean, that I've talked to Seth about that 1,000 times, and you being on the same page only makes this conversation even easier. Like, it was the thing that the Ravens did where they were going for basically every fourth down, and they're going for 2 points all the time and everything. The math was okay, but the logic behind it was borderline flawless in my mind because, like, yeah, you've got to score every time, and you've got to score just about as many points as possible every time you touch the ball. You can't beat this team by running. Like, there's and being on the field for long periods of time doesn't give you extra bonus points.
I would argue that Bill Belichick is the smartest man in football right now. Now, I don't think too many people would argue against me.
Mm-hmm.
They went out. And they, even though they've got this great defense, they took a huge chance and went out and signed Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
And every time there's a receiver out there or a pass catcher or a weapon out there, you hear the Pats link to it. The Pats have no cap space.
Mm-hmm.
And all you hear about is, well, you know, the Pats are going to go after this guy. To me, there is one reason. Because even they know that if they see Kansas City in a playoff game, their defense may be great, they are going to have to score points. They are not beating the Chiefs 17-14.
Right.
They're not going to do it.
Right.
The NFL, the rules are slanted toward offenses. The Chiefs played them twice last year and went up and down the field in both games. I think, look, there is a certain reality that the NFL is fundamentally different than it was 20 years ago.
Yep.
You are not going to win the game anymore against the high-powered offense by just running the ball and playing conservatively. And if you don't believe me, go back and watch the Chiefs with Alex Smith when they played Peyton Manning's Broncos.
Yep.
Because there were an awful lot of games where the Chiefs ran with Jamal Charles and they played, you know, let's try to convert the first downs and move the ball. They got beat almost every time.
Yep.
Couldn't beat them.
Yep.
Couldn't beat them because Denver would get the ball and go down five plays, 90 yards, and jam at the end zone. And now it's just that it's reversed.
So with the Chiefs defensively, there's obviously been all the Jalen Ramsey stuff that's all been varying, you know, kind of waffling between hilarious and horrifying, depending on, I guess, your perspective. But it's the kind of football drama that doesn't make you feel gross after you chuckle at it. It's just Jalen Ramsey once out of Jacksonville. But so that's been around. You've got a handful of Dolphins rumors that turned into trades that weren't Chiefs related. With all of the cornerback rumors, and also the Chiefs are getting Mo Claiborne back from suspension Sunday, in 2 days, you could see him getting some reps against the Colts on Sunday night. With that mindset that you just laid out for the Chiefs offensively, do you see there being a logic in trying to take a big swing for a guy like Jalen Ramsey? Do you want to see Mo Claiborne first? What's your confidence level in that secondary?
Okay, so I think they definitely want to add a corner. They would tell you just publicly that they've wanted to. I think, in fact, I think Brett Veach has come out publicly and said, yeah, you know, we really would have liked to add a corner. We weren't able to do it. I think you said it right after the draft.
Yeah.
That, you know, talking to people around the league, around the Chiefs, that's still very much a reality. They understand, hey, look, if we want to win the Super Bowl, could we do it like this, the way we are? Yeah. But we'd be, you know, in a much better spot if we go out and get a top-tier corner.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding, just like many people's understanding of this, is they were absolutely intrigued by Minkah Fitzpatrick. They got outbid. Mm-hmm. They were interested in Ramsey, and I guess you could still say are interested in Ramsey, but the price is just prohibitive. And my understanding, again, like a lot of people in the league, is, oh, look, it's going to cost at least a couple first-round picks. Talking to people close to Jacksonville, there are no rush to give away Ramsey. They believe in Minshew, and they believe that this team can make the playoffs, and Ramsey eventually, when he gets healthy, is going to be a big part of that. I think if you're the Chiefs, you're either looking at a minor upgrade around, you know, certain guys around the league, or the big swing, which seems to be the white whale in Kansas City, is Patrick Peterson.
Yeah.
Because they're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. He's got a contract that's up after next year. They're not going anywhere next year either.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're the Cardinals, you start thinking about, okay, it makes some sense to move him. Now, what does it take? I mean, let's say it's just, you know, in Kansas City's instance, what would it take for the Chiefs to get him? Would it take their first and San Francisco second? It might. If you're the Chiefs, do you do that? I don't know if you do that. You know, so it's a game of, well, what is it going to cost? Now, with Brown not being on New England anymore, I do think the impetus is a little less because you probably feel like, okay, look, we could put Breland on Gordon. It's not great, but it's not a complete disaster.
Yeah.
They don't have Gronkowski. you know, Fuller's a guy who, say what you want, look, he's a really good slot corner. Could you match him up against Edelman? Yes.
Yeah.
But would they love to go out and get Patrick Peterson? Yeah, absolutely. It's just a question of the cost, and I don't think we're going to know until we get a little closer to that October 29th deadline.
And his suspension's through week six, right? Through six games?
Yes, yes.
It's such an interesting it feels like a move the Cardinals, like, I mean, for, again, the reasons you just laid out, the Cardinals would make. Like, why would you try to convince yourself that a year and a half of him basically is worth not being able to add a young player you have control of for 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, I think to the Cardinals, like, what is the point?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
You need draft capital. And for people to say, well, the Chiefs will draft at the back end of the round. Okay, who cares? Mm-hmm. It might be the 30th or 32nd pick in the draft. So what?
Right.
It's better than not having that pick. So, look, Veach has shown over and over and over he is willing to be aggressive with trades. I don't think this is going to be a matter of whether or not the Chiefs want to make an upgrade. They are definitely in a spot where they want to make an upgrade. The question becomes, you know, cost opportunity. What is it going to cost them?
Yeah.
I think, and this is completely my opinion, I think that if the Chiefs got on the phone with the Cardinals and the Cardinals said first-round pick, mm-hmm. I think the Chiefs would do it.
I did too.
If it becomes first and a second, I don't know what they would do. If it's a first and a third, maybe they do that. And then they trade down in the second round. You know, they get that third back. I mean, I think that's possible. So, like, you know what? You only get so many bites at the apple. They are clearly a championship caliber team. If they could get a Patrick Peterson or you know, a Zajon Howard, whoever else you want to throw in there, I think you've got to really consider and exhaust all options.
Let's look real quick, Matt, to the game coming up on Sunday night, a game that was way more interesting whenever NBC scheduled it because Andrew Luck was still in Indianapolis. Even now, though, yep. With Jacoby Brissett, like you said earlier, you think that that team, at the very least, you know, has a spot contending in the AFC South whenever everything is working. As of right now, as you and I are talking, not totally sure about T.Y. Hilton or Marlon Mack, not looking super optimistic for either, but it seems like T.Y. Hilton might be a legit game-time decision. So whenever you handicap that game, what do you see?
I think this is a really hard game for Indianapolis, and I felt that way when the schedule came out and Andrew Walker was on the team.
Mm.
And you saw why in January. Look, it's easy to sit there and say, well, this team should do this, 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 and this. Well, unless you're New England, which they change like an amoeba every week, most of these teams have kind of an MO, and they are who they are. The Colts play a ton of cover two zone defense.
Mm-hmm.
And talking to coaches around the league prior to that playoff game, I got the same response over and over and over. The Chiefs are going to light him up. They can't cover Kelsey. It's going to be a nightmare. Now, Hill was in that game. He's not going to be in this game. He's been ruled out.
Mm-hmm.
But they do have Mecole Hardman. They have a healthy Sammy Watkins. Marcus Robinson stepped up. Obviously, Kelsey's still there. So the problem I think the Colts are going to have in this game, they don't have a great pass rush. Maybe Justin Houston ratchets it up and gets revenge in this game. But
mm-hmm.
if they don't get pressure on Mahomes, as we've seen time and again, I just don't think you can do much offensively. And also, they're missing a ton of guys. Darius Leonard is their best defensive player by a mile. He's out. Malik Hooker, he's their second best defensive player, in my opinion. He's out. Clayton Gethers, the other starting safety, he's out. I mean, they are just a mass unit, and I don't know how Indianapolis is going to stop them unless Kansas City just stops itself.
And I don't want to be super dramatic, so I'll just I don't think there is a way that really happens. But if you look back at Detroit last week, they were off a little bit offensively. The timing was a little bit wonky. The Lions were doing some interesting things defensively. They were playing some pretty good man coverage. Do you think there's a way for the Chiefs to, quote-unquote, stop themselves?
Yeah, turnovers.
Ah, I mean, good point. You know, fair enough.
I mean, really, that's it.
Yeah.
Look, they're so talented. If they don't turn the ball over, they're just going to score points. I mean, they're so good. They're so well coached. The quarterback, look, everybody focuses on his arm, but it's almost like he conducts a symphony when they're on offense.
Yeah.
It's just so many moving plays. I mean, that's the underrated part of Mahomes is his intellect.
Mm-hmm.
It's just most quarterbacks that are in the league 5-6 years would have a tough time managing that offense the way it is with all the moving parts and all different players and all the different formations. And they play like they've been in this offense for 50 years. I mean, they just know. So, look, my point is, no, I think unless they turn the ball over, I don't think they're going to be stopped very often in this game or in any game. The problem the Colts have, too, and I'm not a huge believer in all this, but I do think it does factor in for some teams and some stadiums. It's hard enough getting the Chiefs at a 1 o'clock game or a noon game in Kansas City. Getting them on a Sunday night nationally televised game in Arrowhead, that is just a very tough spot. That is, you know, you're not going to sneak up on Kansas City in that game. The Chiefs are going to be ready to go. And, you know, we've only seen really like one half, maybe three quarters, where the Chiefs have really offensively just been clicking on all cylinders, which is kind of scary. They're averaging over 30 points a game, and I think a lot of people feel like, yeah, they haven't really played their best football yet. There's eventually going to come a game, and maybe it's Sunday night, maybe it's not, where everything just goes for them, and all systems go, and they score 50 points. I mean, they're capable of it. So we'll see if the Colts can stop them. I don't think they will. I do think the Colts will keep it moderately close, but they'll score some points. Although if T.Y. Hilton's not in the game, that's a major, major problem.
Very last question. They're wearing the red on red for this game. Do you like that look or not?
You know, I do. They look like one giant ketchup bottle with some stripes. But for some reason, maybe it's the bias in me. I don't know. I do. I think it's kind of a cool look. I know people said, oh, I should have a yellow alternate. That's awful.
No, they could never do that. No.
But for the red on red, on the rare occasion, yeah, sure, what the hell.
I'll take it. Thanks, Matt. It's always good to catch up with you.
Hey, thanks a lot, man.
It's Matt Verderam of Fanside of the Stack in the Box podcast. You can check him out and everything he does on Twitter at Matt Verderam.
The most powerful sports station in America has a home in Kansas City. This is Sports Radio 810 WHB.
More late night Chiefs talk for you here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Josh Abriscoe, now joined by the home stretch himself. The Holmes stretch is here now. Sterling Holmes, host of the home stretch from 4 to 6, most weekdays not up against playoff baseball on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM on Twitter at HomestretchKC. Sterling, your Twitter game is not very good, but I want people to follow you because I feel bad for you.
Thank you. You are an absolute sweetheart.
I don't like it when you call me that.
Well, you're going to get called more of it if you keep being nice for once. It's weird you being nice to me. This is...
And that's all the time we have for Sterling Holmes here on Sports Radio 810. That was about two sentences too many.
You proud of that?
You can follow him on Twitter at HomestretchKC.
You proud of that?
Say bye to your own mom. Yeah, no, I am proud of that. I think it's very funny. I think you need to have intros and outros of segments that aren't just saying, I'm Sterling Holmes. I think it's a little weird that you do that every time, but altogether.
I'm professional.
Altogether, if you want to, like, give Sterling a chance, you can search for the home stretch now anywhere people get podcasts, right? Definitely in Apple Podcasts.
I have a podcast right now. And
Spotify?
Not quite yet. Or my Twitter. If you go to my Twitter account, you can literally press the join right there on Twitter, and you get all my podcasts showing up.
At what point in your broadcasting career do you think you'll learn not to pop all your peas in the microphone?
Probably never.
So here's what I'm going to have you do. Just sort of grab it and just tilt it at like a 45-degree angle. You just want to kind of talk past it a little bit. Well, it's still going to get that good sound, but you're just not going ra-ta-ta into the mic like you're one of the Migos.
Yeah, I was getting ready to do something it was going to be really loud, so I figured it's a bad idea.
I mean, I'll turn you down. Do it again. I can turn you back up. Do it again. Cook it.
Dude, I'd be so good as a backup rapper. Like, I think that... That's my
just doing the ad libs.
The hype man. I'd be such a good hype man.
Yeah, I think you could. I really like the designer ad libs. You know, the guy who had Panda and then did nothing else. And every sentence he says is in cursive, is in like drunk cursive.
Well, you know why he didn't do anything else?
That's because he couldn't understand him.
Well, he went to the Atlanta game, the Hawks game, and he was playing over the yeah. But he was he couldn't sing in the right tempo, and everyone saw this and goes, okay, maybe this guy's really, really bad.
Yeah, so this might not really be his calling.
This may not be his calling. Maybe it was just one good beat that he bought for like $20 and ripped that guy off.
That's probably what happened, right? Because I literally can't think of, I haven't heard of designers from Designer since then.
There you go.
Designer with two eyes. Who's your favorite rapper?
Favorite rapper of all time or right now?
Right now.
Kevin Gates is up there. Big Kevin Gates guy, yeah.
That makes sense.
Kevin Gates, current,
two phones. Right?
Currency.
Two phones?
No. I'm talking, you know.
He has two phones, though, right?
He is. That's him, yeah.
That's fine. Who's your favorite rapper of all time?
Either Biggie or Eminem. Big Eminem guy.
That's super unsurprising.
Yeah, I mean, why is that unsurprising there, Briscoe?
Everyone knows. We're basically here to talk loosely about Chiefs-Colts coming up on Sunday. Or just Chiefs in general at this point. I don't listen to your show when I'm not on it, so I don't know if you've said anything interesting about Chiefs-Lions or anything with the team so far this year. But we haven't really talked since we met it in the pregame, that overnight pregame show.
Yep.
Back for week one. Yep. What do you feel like you've learned about the Chiefs in the last 4 weeks?
I do want to say I called Sammy Watkins having the big game week one, so that one I am proud about.
Did you ever call him having another big game since then?
I have not.
Okay, well,
so, yeah.
Tell him to get one this Sunday.
No, my biggest takeaways from the Lions and Chiefs, first off, was obviously we put up 34 points the Chiefs put up 34 points with Patrick Mahomes having a so-called off day.
Right.
But just think of if Alex Smith threw for 315 yards, no interceptions, we would have been ecstatic.
A fourth quarter, last second drive, a 4th-and-8 conversion, all that. Yeah, it would have been one of the 5 best games of Alex Smith's career.
Yes. So yeah. That's a little overblown. We still won with 4 fumbles, 3 lost. You know, the Chiefs won. Sorry, I saw your smirk. And just overall, the takeaways were all that's great and fine and dandy. Love it. Run defense was that bad, and we still come up with a win. So maybe we're putting too much emphasis on stopping the run when really it doesn't matter as much as we think.
Right.
And you and I briefly talked about this, and it's the Andy Reid clock management still.
Yeah, you do have a weird bone to pick on this one, but I'm going to get out of your way.
So, and again, I'm not blaming Andy Reid because it obviously worked out. It also helps when you have Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback. Mm-hmm. It makes the clock management issues kind of go away. It's what happens with it. But on that 4th-and-8, they called timeout. It was just under 2 minutes. I believe it was 1 minute and 55 seconds. You and me did the math.
They're on the wrong side of the 2-minute warning.
On the wrong side of the 2-minute warning. But if you don't pick up that fourth down, the game is completely over. You do not get the ball back. You have zero chance. But if you don't call timeout, say you don't pick it up, mm-hmm. you will get the ball back if you get a stop with around 30 seconds left in the game. So you give yourself another opportunity.
Yeah.
And you can say what you will. Maybe that was the play they drew up was if you don't see anyone with man coverage, Mahomes has a drop the middle.
Right.
I don't believe that necessarily. I think it was a busted kind of play. You call a timeout for a busted play, and if it doesn't go through, we're talking about something completely different after this game.
I think that the very last part is probably right, but I think what the point is there is let's call the timeout, and we are going to choose to, instead of rush this play, we are going to make sure we're all on the exact same page on this play and voluntarily make it our last shot, which, again, is a little bit risky for reasons that I think you've pointed out. But especially whenever you're looking, if this was maybe before the 2-minute warning, I could see that even more so.
Yeah.
If this would have been 2.5 minutes, maybe you're trying to get the ball back with a minute to try to work down the field and everything. I understand that, like, where you're coming from on that, and that if they didn't get it, someone would have brought it up by now in a way that would have been a little more critical. But I think that their decision was essentially like, hey, this bullet might not fire. Let's throw it off to the side and make this one our last shot.
Yeah.
Ended up working, obviously.
No, no.
So we're playing the results on that. Like, that's not a great way to evaluate. So I don't want to fall into that trap.
But that's 100% fine. Obviously, it worked out. And obviously, it helps when Mahomes is your quarterback.
Yes.
It makes clock management look at least.
Do you call him Mahomes because your last name is Holmes and you want to feel like you're a part of his family?
A little bit.
Okay.
So my Priest Holmes jersey, I'm putting a muh in front of it, and then a 5 at the end, so it's 315, so it's a combo.
I called him Patrick Mahomes. I said Priest Mahomes. I said Priest Mahomes on the radio pretty soon after they drafted Patrick.
I was there, by the way.
And you were there
in Philly
when they drafted him?
I was right there. I was at the NFL draft, and I was going crazy. I was excited, but I thought it was Deshaun Watson at first. When we traded up, I go,
did you boo?
No.
We. You make the call?
Yeah. I was on the call. Goodell.
You called the Bills and was like, yo, here's what I've
no,
got.
I called Goodell. I said, yo, Goodell.
Hey, we made the trade.
And he's like, and then he got booed. And
We're trading up for Patty, but everyone thinks it's Watson.
That was surprising, Mama.
I wasn't surprised.
I guess you know more than me.
I spent the like month leading up to the draft being like, guys, this should be Mahomes. I want it to be Mahomes. Deshaun Watson would be fine, but I hope it's Mahomes. I didn't even bleep with Mitch Trubisky.
No, no, no. Trubisky was, if we would have got him, I would have been livid.
The Bears traded up for Trubisky. They traded up by one spot because they were like, yo, this guy is so can't miss that if somebody jumps us at two and takes Trubisky and we have to settle for Mahomes or Watson, our franchise is bleeped. That was an amazing thing they did.
I think they'd been fine with Chase Daniel.
I mean, because they're also starting Chase Daniel, not literally, I mean, literally now, I guess, but
yeah,
but also figuratively.
Yeah, I mean, like,
they may have traded up for Kirk Cousins. Like, think about that. How heartbreaking is that if you're a Bears fan?
Well, you still have a good defense, so I don't think they're too upset right now.
They should be upset because they're watching two of the five best quarterbacks in the league, the guys they passed on. It's heartbreaking. What do you think happens against the Colts, or what are you looking for against Indy? We don't have a ton of time left here tonight, but that's obviously what we're all waiting for at this point. You can take what all the takeaways you just mentioned from the Detroit game. But they come to back to Arrowhead, Sunday Night Football, prime time, all of that. Pick your poison.
I was going to say third down defense. I don't care about stopping the run as long as you stop them at least a few times on third down.
And I played the audio earlier of Steve Spagnuolo talking about win-loss percentage. They had a 61% win-loss percentage in the second half whenever the Lions ran the ball. But on five of those losses, they gave up a total of 68 yards. So I'll add to that something Spagnuolo mentioned earlier that I know you didn't hear yet.
Yeah, the red zone defense, obviously. That's obviously bigger than anything. And I would like to see Mecole Hardman. I want to see him get on a better page with Patrick Mahomes. Almost every game this year, actually I would say every game this year, he's ran a one to multiple poor routes.
Mm-hmm.
The Lions game, he ran a couple that you're like, that's the best.
What happened?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And I want to see him get on a better wavelength with Mahomes. Outside of that, I'm not too scared of the Colts. They have all these injuries. A lot of their defense is decimated right now. But the same thing with the Lions. They were out.
That's true. Darius Slay,
their best cornerback, was out.
That's a good point.
So we'll see what the Colts do. They may try to be more physical since they will have to be with some of their talent out.
Yeah.
Which obviously
Gave
the Chiefs some problems last week.
Yeah. Give me a score.
Give you a score.
Give me a score. Probably two numbers and then two more numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be particularly close. 38 Chiefs, 17 Colts.
Yeah, I've got that basically a touchdown extra in each direction. Wow. Was that on purpose? Or did you say 17 to, what would you say, 38-17?
Yeah.
Did you do that on purpose?
No, I did not. That was just
you flipped it and you just went 17-38 in your head.
Yeah, because you were talking about rappers and how.
Yeah,
whatever happened to that? Fetty Wap, he hit that song with Lil Dicky. And then,
he did. Can we say Lil Dicky on the radio? You probably can.
It's probably your nickname.
I was going to talk to you about quarter zips and hoodies and everything, and then this guy with the mysterious growth on his lip comes through with jokes.
Bro, you know I cut it laughing at a joke. You were there.
I wasn't there. I was across the hall when that happened. And the joke that I wanted to make, I definitely can't stay on the radio. So that'll be all. Thanks, Sterling. What's your problem with hoodies, and why do you love quarter? Sterling said before we started going here, he said he's so happy it's quarter zip season. I'm not a big quarter zip guy because I like to go layer on, layer off. I got a ton of jackets. I love jackets. I love a zip up hoodie. I like a pullover hoodie if I know it's gonna be cold and like the rooms I'm also in. I'm a big hoodie at home guy because I'm letting my apartment get cold. I'm not trying to spend money. You know, trying to keep my apartment warm or anything like that. A hoodie at home is perfect.
Lil Dicky and Fetty Wap.
Save that money. There it is. Why do you love quarter zips and hate hoodies and hate jackets?
Quarter zips, A, they look better. They do. If you're telling me.
Then a hoodie, yes. Then jackets, no.
See, jackets.
These are more casual.
Jackets aren't very comfortable. They have the zip up the whole way. I'm like,
I got buttons because I'm not a toddler.
Don't like
that.
Don't like it. Quarter zips, they look good. You can wear them anywhere.
They look fine. They look...
How do I look right now?
You look like a low-level employee for the Philadelphia 76ers, which I'm guessing is where you got that hoodie from.
1,000%. Nailed it on the head.
I mean, it's got a little Sixers logo, a little world champions thing from whatever, you know, how many hundred years ago they won the last
67.
Title.
67, that's, yeah, a little bit ago.
It's been a hot minute. It's been a minute. I'm a Suns fan, so, I mean, I've got literally nowhere to stand on that one. But it just, yeah, it looks like, I mean, I have a Arizona Coyotes quarter zip that's like that I wear because it's pretty light. I wear it whenever it's about like it is outside right now, but it's not.
Big vest guy. Big vest guy.
So much sense. Big puffy vest. Or are you the dude wearing like a suit vest?
No.
Just out casually drinking. You're a white t-shirt and then a suit vest.
No, that guy is a I'm not going to say that.
On the radio.
That guy definitely rocks the fedora though.
Yeah, for
that guy
sure.
Definitely listens to only Jason Mraz and
oh, he's yours, baby.
Oh man.
Puffy vest guy?
It doesn't have to be puffy. You know, like the Patagonia vest?
Yeah. That's a little puffy.
That's the ideal.
That's a little puffy, right?
Yeah, it can be.
A little puff to it?
It can be. It's a little thick with a couple. No, about 2 C's thick.
You can listen to the home stretch on ESPN Kansas City, 94.5 FM and 1510 AM weekdays, unless there's baseball that bumps them. And you can get it at the podcast page. Just search for it on Apple Podcasts. He's going to get it everywhere else. Let's go, Sterling. Get your podcast.
I know,
places.
I'm trying.
You can also follow him on Twitter at HomestretchKC. Will you have a good tweet at some point this week, you think?
Dude, I had a couple. You liked my chicken one, the young chicken. Rap names are getting poor. I've had a couple good ones. Come on.
I'm going to your Twitter account right now to see if I can find a good tweet from you.
Thank you. You know, there's a couple on there.
Oh yeah, there actually is one here. It's technically a retweet, but it's. I just found out that at Homestretch KC's alarm tone on his phone is "Forever," the Drake/Lil Wayne/Eminem/Kanye track from 2009. Sterling's brand is consistent. It's insufferable, but it's consistent. That's a good tweet that you retweeted.
That was from you.
That was from me. Still counts as a good tweet. Thank you, Sterling.
Thanks, Prisco.
You can follow him on Twitter at HomestretchKC. I'm not sure if I would or not, but you can.
Kansas City's hometown sports station. Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Still Joshua Prisco here on Sports Radio 810, getting you ready in the wee hours of the night slash morning, depending on which direction you're going here. This Friday evening into Saturday morning, we will get out of your hair here in a minute. I don't know why it made it sound like you're not happy to hear from me. You should be, because I'm here deep into the nighttime, getting ready for Chiefs and Colts. I will say that we will wrap things up here in just a few minutes. Thanks again to Matt Verderam and Sterling Holmes for joining us over the course of the show tonight. I'm going to send you out, though, again, either out for some Friday night fun or back home from some Friday night fun, or maybe this will get you ready Saturday or Sunday morning on the podcast page. If you're hearing this live, you can go to 810WHB.com, the 810 mobile app, or just subscribe to Almost Entirely Sports, wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be up there as well. And I'm going to send you out with a little bit of Andy Reid. He typically has a pretty quick sort of media scrum on a Friday, and I listened to this earlier today and actually found a lot of it relatively interesting. He gives you a little update on Tyreek Hill, where he's at, and why he's not playing on Sunday, and you get a little update on a couple guys there, some stuff that he's thinking coming up with the Colts, and at the end he tells you a story about tailgating. So I don't know what else you could possibly ask for. Here's head coach Andy Reid.
All right, guys not playing are Fish and Dorian O'Daniel, and then 10 won't play either, so he didn't practice. He practiced today, but he's been doing well. But he'll be listed as out for you. That's Tyreek. Look forward to the opportunity of playing the Colts. We know they're a good football team, and we know their guys are back. They were minus a few guys last week, and they'll be ready to go. So our guys have had a good week of practice. Respect the heck out of that group and all that they do. But again, we had our guys worked their tail off this week. So look forward to the atmosphere at Arrowhead. It's a great place to play, and in particular on Sunday night. So we expect to see everybody out there. All right, well, that time's yours.
Tyreek didn't have any sort of setback.
No, not at all. Yeah,
not, process.
Yeah, he got in and did it, and you know, worked and really did a good job. But you know.
Has he been a good guy? I mean, as far as has he handled being injured all right? I know he wants to go and go and go.
Yeah, he wears you out that way. But you got to. He wants to jump in everywhere. But we got to be smart with it too. So, yeah. He's been great, yeah. To answer your question, yeah, great.
How much was he able to get done? I mean,
he got out. Yeah, no, he got out and mixed it up and, you know, worked in some team periods and, you know, just he did a nice job. Yeah. So. But he's not, it's just not ready to go yet. Yeah.
You made a call on Damian Williams that he's going
to? Yeah, Damian will, unless something happens today. But other than that, he's ready to go and had a good week of practice. So, yeah.
Andy, is it more just making sure it's a slow progress for Tyree, just not to rush him too soon at this point?
Yeah, just
is there something you want
to
see?
Yeah, I'm not. Listen, I just listen to the doctors and I talk to the kid and he wants to play, but at the same time we got to make sure that thing's taken care of. It's a weird, you know, it's not your normal injury that you have, so you just got to make sure it's right and you don't have any setbacks on it.
Given what you saw to Tyreek Hill this past week, how optimistic are you that he will be able to return maybe next week?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll just see how it goes. You know how we roll. So we just go with the guys that are go, and then we let the docs take care and Rick take care of the rest of it. So we have full trust in those guys that they'll let us know, and then we have great communication with our players. So they're honest with us. As much as they want to play, we know they want to play, but they'll be honest with you when it really gets down to it. So
you mentioned Sunday night and atmosphere and all that, and I know every game is just one of 16, and that's the way you have to do it. But do these things feel a little bit different now, the Sunday night game? Because Al Michaels is running around here, and you got to do kind of some of that kind of stuff. Does it feel different?
Yeah. I don't know how much he's running around here, but
he's walking.
Yeah, he's walking.
But yeah.
But he's a good guy. Good guy. He went to, he's a good guy, real good guy. I mean, listen, it's Sunday night football, so guys know that. I mean, you're playing at night and you're home here and it'll be electric and all that, but you got to go out and you got to play. That's what you have to do. So that's where you try to keep your focus and make sure you go through the process during the week and then, keep yourself in under playing control for games.
We had an opportunity to talk to Frank Clark, and he mentioned he's feeling some of that pressure and that extra attention. What have your conversations been with him like? Usually your message is kind of being who you are, but Frank Clark in particular.
Yeah, Frank's doing a phenomenal job. You know, it's a respect he gets. He gets double. And so, but nobody works harder. You saw him before the intercept or the fumble recovery, and he got the team together and gave the defense a pump up, and then they go out and get the fumble recovery and you know, score. So he's great to work with. He's phenomenal that way. And you talk about energy now. He brings it every snap at practice during the game, 110 miles an hour. So
a couple more guys.
Andy, I know you guys added Morris Claiborne onto the active roster yesterday. You've seen him through these three practices. Just what are your evaluation of how he is so far, and what are the options of maybe seeing him on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, there's a chance. We'll just see. I'm going to check with the guys and check with his coaches, you know, so just see how he is. But he practiced, and we'll see how it goes once we get there. But he did practice, and he had a good 3 days, and he got himself in pretty good shape. So it wasn't like when he came back he couldn't move or that. He moved around pretty good. So
last one, BJ. Go ahead, Adam. Go.
The release of Jeff Allen, particularly with Fisher still out, kind of leaves you guys without a veteran off the bench. What was your thought process there with that particular roster move?
Well, we've got some good young guys, particular tackles, and so he had to make a move somewhere. And yeah. And that's a tough one. I mean, because Jeff is a special guy, but again, we have trust in some of the other guys that they can step in and play if needed. And then we have flexibility within the guys playing in the line now that they can play different spots. So we felt like we could move people around, and I had a good conversation with Andy about it, we felt we were okay there. So.
Have those two young guys, the kid from Baltimore and the one from mm-hmm. Houston, been able to show you much?
Yeah, they've done a nice job. Smart kids. And so they've stepped up and done a good job for us, yeah.
Coach, you mentioned before on the noon games, you get in here at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and see the people lined up to tailgate.
Yeah.
Do you still see those people that early on the Sunday night games?
Yeah, it's the one guy with the pickup truck and the barbecue. And he has that thing out grilling breakfast dogs or something. I'm not sure what he's doing, but he's out there. And then I've watched him. He just takes that barbecue and he puts it right back in the truck, fully lit, and then drives right in the stadium. I'm sure he brings it back out and puts it down. It's a beautiful thing.
And there's Andy Reid, passionate about that one guy there super early for tailgates on Sundays, even for primetime games. And then also passionate about the Chiefs taking on the Colts coming up on Sunday. Here they're a good football team, well-coached, good players. That's going to do it for us here tonight on Sports Radio 810. Next time you'll hear from me will be immediately following the conclusion of the Broncos and Chargers as Brad Porter and I get you ready for the Chiefs and Colts Sunday Night Football game with a special Sunday Night Football preview show here on Sports Radio 810. But the rundown for a Chiefs Sunday is that it gets going with the Chiefs tailgate show at 8 a.m. Central Bank of the Midwest pregame show 9 to noon. Get you whipped around the NFL from noon to 3. with ESPN's NFL Game Day. Then Broncos versus Chargers right here on 810. Me and Brad will follow that immediately after. Then you're going to go tune out, watch the game, and then come back right to us. Or maybe go watch the game in person. And then come right back to us as soon as the game ends. We'll fire back up the transmitter, and it'll be me and Brad Porter with you here on Sports Radio 810, breaking down what I believe will be a 42-24 victory in Arrowhead. And my only concern is that maybe the defense is better than I expected to be. And it's like 42-10, a la the Sunday Night Football shootout with the Chiefs and Bengals that started sad fans on Reddit last season. That game was fun. I'm thinking another one of those. Maybe that's what we'll see Sunday night in Arrowhead. But until then, I'll still be Josh Briscoe on Twitter at JB Briscoe, floating around your Twitter timelines until pre and post and everything else here on Sports Radio 810. Talk to you then. Bye, Mom.
Follow the Chiefs right here on your home for the NFL playoffs and the Super Bowl. Sports Radio 810. WHB.